Welcome to episode 62 of Communicast, a communication skills podcast. I'm Scott D'Amico, president of Communispond, a global communication skills training organization. When delivering a speech or presentation, find your fans and make eye contact with them at the beginning. It will help reduce your nerves and get things kicked off on the right foot. Great advice from my guest, Diana Boer. Diana is a Hall of Fame speaker, best-selling author, and executive presence expert. In this episode, we talk about the importance of listening, the difference between a story and an anecdote, and why you shouldn't memorize your presentations. I hope you enjoy. Diana, thank you so much for joining me today.
Sure, it's good to be with you.
Absolutely. Really looking forward to our conversation. And before we jump too far into things, why don't you tell the listeners just a little bit about you, your journey, and the great work that you're doing?
Well, basically, I started out as a writer very early in my career. This was a way to make a living. My husband was going through a severe depression, not able to work, and I had two toddlers. And so I needed to stay home with him and make a living. So I asked a friend of mine, what can I do? And he said, what do you enjoy? I thought, well, I used to like to write English compositions in school, but how to make a living at that? And he said, I suggest you find out. So basically, I went to the public library, checked out everything in the 800 section that had to do with writing, from writing mystery novels to greeting card verses. And that's how I started, really just writing.
Very cool. And so how did you take the leap from you starting off writing, getting your books out there, and then to you're doing a lot more so in, say, like the public speaking space and training and things like that?
Absolutely. It all grew from that authorship. When the first business book came out, it was called Would You Put That in Writing? And that has been a phenomenal success as a business book. And I had a lot of media interviews. Clients saw me on major, ABC spot. I was on most all the networks. And the morning that it launched, I had a big story in the Houston Chronicle, Above the Fold. It was just a huge piece. And by noon that day, I had 38 calls from people saying, can you come out and help? Not people, but corporations saying, can you come out and help us do that? So I just accidentally really tapped a huge market. I remember one of my vice presidents of a major oil company, who's a friend of mine, was saying, engineers can't write. When I'd ask him, how about a book on business writing? He said, of course, engineers can't write. We pay a woman a big bucks to come in from Atlanta to teach all of our people. And they were in Houston. The oil company was in Houston. So I thought, that's a good thing for me to do. And I called on Shell Oil. They said, come out and talk to us. And they passed my name to Exxon, who passed my name to, Houston Natural Gas. And it just went all over the oil and gas industry. And some of the TV spots, IBM saw me. And so it travels, my reputation for those writing workshops traveled from the oil industry to the high tech industry. And it just sort of evolved from there. I never really planned to have a communication training program or our company, but it just evolved from every different book I would write, all of course under the communication umbrella.
Oh, wow. What a fascinating journey to see really just how it blossomed out of that first book. And I love the title, Would You Put That in Writing? I think that might have to be the title of this episode. Fantastic to think
actually
about.
Actually, that title got changed when it sold very, very well. And Penguin Random House picked up the paperback. And then Simon & Schuster came along and redid the book, or had me rewrite it and incorporate a lot of different things on business and technical writing. And that book's called E-Writing, Effective Communication Tools for the 21st Century. So that has the same content and obviously meets the same market. Even I would say a growing market, because the countries, it's global. Countries around the world use English as their business language and they need to write. And then of course we have a lot of people that English is their second language speaking, working right here in the US. And so it was just the right time with the right message and the right information.
Absolutely. And I have the e-writing book in my desk. I have that one and one of your other books that I do keep handy for reference. That's very cool to hear. I didn't realize that it spawned out of that book. And how many books have you written throughout your career?
To date, 50 that I have under my own under my own name. And then I've, ghost written some books for other people and had some compilations, but I just say 50.
It's a nice round number. I love it. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So Diana, with your experience, both from being an author and working with organizations and doing training, I know still very active in the business community today, I'm sure you come across a lot of folks that are great communicators, probably some not so good communicators. But when you hear that term that somebody is a great communicator or that they have very strong communication skills, what's that mean to you? Somebody that's really an expert in this space, what's the image that comes to mind?
Well, there are a lot of specific things that create that big picture. And I like to call it executive presence, but it's all about communication because that's the basic business act. That's how we get things done. But I think of somebody who thinks quickly on their feet, who can respond under pressure no matter what happens. They seem to always be able to express what needs to be said clearly and persuasively. And that persuasive communication is actually a different skill than just informing people, just being clear. I also think of people who can synthesize a lot of information. I mean, that's one of the key skills, I think, is leadership, because you have so much information coming to you, and to be able to boil that down and then replay it. In other words, send it out to people who need to do something because of what you've just said or that message. I think that synthesization is a key skill. And answering questions, I think they need to be a good storyteller. And then, of course, their body language needs to support, not sabotage, their message. And those things, you teach in your Communispons presentations programs. We've taught it in our Boer programs. And that involves your movement. People can see your confidence. They see your eye contact, your gestures, your handshake. All of that comes across in body language. So that's a significant part of being a good communicator.
Couldn't agree more. And there's so much that goes into effective communication. I think a lot of times people take it for granted and take for granted all the different things you need to think about when you are communicating, whether it's just a one-to-one conversation, you're giving a keynote address at a conference, or you're in a sales meeting. So much needs to go into it on the front end. And as you were talking about some of those skills and attributes, being able to synthesize, being able to think quickly on your feet, to tell stories, to really get your message out there concisely, a big part of that is you need to be able to listen. Because if you want to synthesize, you want to be able to incorporate stories, you want to be able to respond quickly, listening is one of the best ways to do that. And that's, I can say, having a teenager and a preteen is a skill that in my household is lacking right now. But it's definitely something we're working to develop.
Absolutely. Listening is a very important point because you don't know how to respond if you don't really understand what the other person's saying. You're just talking off the top of your head and maybe not hitting the nail at all. Particularly, that's important for authors. I know when I published one of the first three of the books that I published with Barrett Kohler, that publisher has an excellent process of getting input before the book even comes out. When you send your manuscript off, they send it to potential readers, four or five people that would be likely buyers of that book, asking for their input. And things that you don't even think about that could be misunderstood, people come back and make a comment. I remember I was talking about executive presence in that book, Creating Personal Presence, and they sent it to an Army major who had left the military and was out in corporate America looking for a job. And he said, we never had to decide what we were going to wear. We had a uniform. But now I need to think about the aspects of dressing and my personal appearance and how that comes across in the corporate world. Well, I had never thought about making that application, but he said, you've got about two pages on it. I'd like to see three or four pages, more and more tips. So that input by listening, as you said, whether you're an author or you're a facilitator or a consultant, whoever you are, that is the essence of leadership to me, is listening to what people are saying to you and being able to decide what kind of action and direction you should take because of your customers, your market, and even your own employees.
Yes, listening comes in so many forms. It's not just you and I having a conversation and me trying to pay attention to what you're saying. listening, as you mentioned, trying to understand what does the customer, the ultimate end user of this product, what do they want out of it? So doing research like that. If you are giving a speech somewhere, maybe a trade association, you might be before the speech talking to some people out in the common areas, or you've done research about trends that's going on within that particular space. There's so many ways that you can listen, listening with your eyes to pick up on that body language that you just mentioned, listening for, which is kind of hard to pick up on, it can be misconstrued, but listening for tone in, say, email communications or just lack of response sometimes. No response is a response to something. So there's all these different ways that you can listen, more so than just that one-on-one dialogue.
Absolutely. And it is essential to listen if you are going to be a speaker, if you're doing presentations inside your program, and just in general. I was doing a keynote yesterday, and I spent 2 hours listening to their CEO, the director of operations, and a vice president tell me all about their organization. And only by listening was I able to incorporate those examples, those day-to-day tasks, communication tasks, to be able to apply the good principles of communication to exactly what they're doing. So I would not have been nearly as effective. And I thought it went extremely well yesterday, and extremely good feedback, but it would have not been effective had I not listened for 2 hours, you know, two different meetings of an hour, for them simply giving me input about, here's a day in the life of this person in this role. Here's the day in the life of these people who are in this role. And that was essential. And I think you can extrapolate that to any industry. If you're going to lead them, if you're going to help them, you're going to coach them as a manager, you have to listen to see what they're doing and what their issues and what their challenges are.
And that ties into a big part of leadership. And I think ultimately being an effective communicator is that flexibility. Had you just gone in with your mindset, this is my message, this is what I'm going to be delivering, or say a business leader that thinks, okay, this is our strategy, this is what we need to do. Maybe I've rehearsed and I've memorized my speech that I'm going to give it to all hands, and I'm not willing or I'm not open enough to take in that input, even if it is at the last second, to be able to adapt and tweak my message a little bit, it's gonna ultimately fall flat and not be as effective as it could have been had you been open to listening, asking the right questions, and have not been so locked in. I think what a lot of people do sometimes with their communications, both written, and I think more so when they're giving, say, a presentation, is they try to memorize everything. And I always try to discourage away from that. If you memorize, yes, for a couple of reasons, one, it takes away some of your flexibility to adapt if you learn new information at the last minute. And then the second you misstate one word, right? You say something different than what you have memorized, your brain just starts to swirl. Absolutely. And it causes a whole mess for you.
You know, you asked me earlier about my definition of, and what skills are in play as an effective communicator. I think that flexibility that you just mentioned is key to identifying with your audience. Because I'm just thinking of yesterday, the keynote I delivered. As I made a point, many people were saying, well, a couple of weeks ago, I just emailed this client, or I just had them ask me, and how would I have applied that situation? Their input helps be flexible. And I think that your flexibility communicates your true skill. Anybody can memorize. I mean, if they work on it long enough, really, you've seen your second grader, your children stand up and, you know, give their lines in a school play. Stiff, yes. Frightened, yes. Deer in the headlights look, yes. But we don't need those kind of presentations. It comes across as fake. It comes across as outdated, sometimes irrelevant, because if you're not listening to them and flexible enough to respond in the moment to what somebody's asking you, I don't think you could ever consider that great communication.
I agree. And you know, my son is in high school and he's currently in a public speaking class. And first I was like, you better do well in this. Don't make me look bad. But he was giving his first speech. And so I was helping him with it the other night. And I could tell that his intro he had memorized. And the reason I could tell was that as soon as he, like I said, misstated one word, he got so flustered. He would just breathe real heavy and try. I'm like, you don't want to memorize it. Start to think of maybe three or four key points you're trying to convey, and then talk off of that, because I saw it. He missed a word, misspoke. And then it just started to shut down. Right. So I think that flexibility absolutely is key.
We never coach people to memorize their whole presentation. Now, I do suggest that they know their opening 1 minute, the 30 seconds mm-hmm. are opening down cold. Have it down cold. And then it will usually come out fine. If you miss a word or a phrase, it doesn't boggle your mind. You mm-hmm. don't get stumped, you know, don't start stumbling. But that last, the first 30 seconds and your last 30 seconds, okay, that's a mm-hmm. sentence or two or three. You can generally right. handle that. But you want to practice not showing in your body language and your facial expression your confusion if you do misstate a phrase or whatever. Mm-hmm. It just sounds natural for you to back up and restate something. If you flub a word, if you miss something, that just makes you human and people mm-hmm. identify with that. It makes you seem more authentic. So I'd never tell people that if you don't say something just exactly like you intend to, you know, this horrible yeah. look. Just continue as if you were having dinner with someone and explaining the point.
And the audience had no idea what you're going to say anyway. So that's the other thing I always tell people. They don't know.
They don't know you're off script.
Exactly. They're rooting for you. If you go into it with that mindset that they're rooting for you, you know, if I flub something, I just kind of keep on going. Those nerve levels are going to come down. It's going to make the rest of the presentation or the speech be that much better.
Right. You know, and another tip that I like to pass on if somebody is really nervous at the beginning is what I call find your fans. You know, meet some people ahead of time, ask them what they do, just show interest in them. And then when you start, you look at those three or four people around the room and that relaxes you. You just kind mm-hmm. of subconsciously thinking, I'm just talking in conversation to these people. And that relaxation helps you do your best at the beginning and get rid of those nerves.
Absolutely. So Diana, as you're out there and you're working with organizations, talking with leaders, what are some of the key communication skills that they're really seeing as being critical for success in the workplace today, or maybe some areas they're struggling with? I would say some of the things that I hear now is with, you know, multi-generational workforces and the generations communicating so differently, especially with text and email and things like that, and the TikTokification of communication. You know, what are some things that you're hearing from business leaders around the skills that they're needing?
Well, I think they need to understand the different platforms and the kind of communication that's appropriate for the different platforms. Yesterday, I was talking with someone. We were talking about chasing a customer from channel to channel. You know, you text them and then they didn't respond. So I left a voicemail for them and they didn't respond to that. So I sent them an email. And then, you know, they're wasting so much time. It becomes a real productivity challenge. You do have to repeat, of course, because people don't always remember. But that doesn't mean that you're on one situation, one issue that you're trying to get an answer, that you just keep responding and trying to use your preferred method when mm-hmm. you need to respond in their preferred method. So I think productivity is a huge challenge for people now in communication. I also see them challenged when we talk about good storytelling. I know I did a blog years back on the difference between telling an anecdote and telling mm-hmm. a story. And a lot of people don't know the difference. I remember I coach at the executive level frequently. I remember talking with this CEO who's in his late 60s of a very large company. And I had him to start by telling me a story. And he just told me a sort of a slice of life anecdote. And I said, well, that's an anecdote. I'd like to show you the difference in telling, using that situation as a story. And he went, oh, he got red in the face. And he said, I'm so embarrassed. He said, I've been, you know, X number of years with my corporation. He said, I've never known the difference. And he was just astounded. But his communication, when he had an all hands meeting with thousands and thousands and thousands of employees, improved dramatically once he learned that difference. So I think storytelling remains a big challenge out there, in addition to the productivity challenges that I talked about, moving from channel to channel and understanding those channels.
Yeah, two big things there, right? You hit on the idea of the productivity, and I think you really nailed it with focusing not on my preferred method of communication, but what's ultimately going to be the preferred or the best channel of communication for this particular task. There are some things where a Slack message or a text message makes perfect sense there. There are other things when it 100% makes sense, you really need to pick up the phone and work through this, because it's going to be so much more efficient than the ping pong of emails going back and forth all day long with no resolution. So
Right. Absolutely
figure out what's the right channel or method for the communication. And then storytelling is so huge. And I really like how you put that, the difference between an anecdote and a story, right? An anecdote really just is, as you mentioned, kind of a slice of life. It's conveying information, facts, whatever it is. For me, a story is, how do you take that anecdote and help somebody understand something typically somewhat unrelated, right? You're helping kind of bridge two different things with a story.
Yes. With the storytelling, I mean, you can go back to your English, college English, your professor, they gave you the definition. It is a hero struggling to reach a goal. And, you know, that hero might be a certain product that you're introducing into the market, and it needs to become successful. How did that happen? That's the story. It could be some manager struggling against change who ultimately wanted to have this change, but didn't know how to effect that in their total team and their total mm-hmm. experience. And they finally achieved that goal. So that hero is struggling toward a goal, whether that's the company or product, a service or a person, and they have obstacles to overcome. And once they do, people really identify emotionally with that. Mm-hmm. And that emotion, in addition to the logical point you're trying to make, really makes the difference in being a persuasive communicator. You know, a lot of people know how to share information, but I wrote a whole book on information is not communication. And because there's just so much information out there on all the different platforms, that necessitates that we rise above the crowd and learn how to actually communicate persuasively, as opposed to just giving information. And one way to do that, a very good way to do that, is with an effective story.
Mm-hmm. And the emotional layer is really what can set it apart. And for me, when you're trying to connect emotionally, is you ultimately need to make sure that there is a match between what you're saying, how you're saying it, and how you look when you say it. So if you're trying to tell this, maybe some sort of heartfelt story, and your eyes, your body language, your tone are not matching that, it's not going to work. Or if I'm trying to tell something that's very exciting and I'm just, very droll and slow and I'm slouched over, it's not going to resonate with the audience. So really having that story, making the emotional connection, and ensuring that there's alignment between kind of what you're saying, how you're saying it, and how you look when you say it.
Yes, how you're delivering it. Your body language has to support, not sabotage, that impact of the story. That's true. And, I'm not necessarily talking about personal stories. I mean, it could mm-hmm. be a story about anybody, but I think it even makes an emotional connection. If you were talking about a product, we tried to launch this and we couldn't sell it. We couldn't sell that, whatever. And then we changed this marketing campaign. And at first it took off, and then it didn't. And then you have the big incentive that really worked and it sold 1 billion copies or whatever. Those mm-hmm. kind of stories are still stories of a struggle, and it has a conclusion, and people still identify it with it. So I don't mean to convey that a story is always your personal experience. It's a heart melting kind of comment, but you just need the audience to root with you. You need the listener to say, I identify with that. That's happened to me. It's happened to a friend of mine. I understand that. And that's the kind of emotion we're going for most of the time in a business setting.
Spot on. Diana, who's someone, or I guess if you think through your career journey, what would you say would be the one or two key communication skills that really have helped you to be successful and get you to the point where you are today?
I would say that has to be my writing, because that's my life's work. And I even suggest to most people that I talk to, it's your life work, because that's how business gets done. It's been called, communication has been called the basic business act. But I think mm-hmm. the part of that applies most to me is writing, because of all the books. And then listening to input about what the market needs, what are their challenges, so I can meet those through my speaking business. And I think also interviewing and researching. Now, of course, back in the day when I started out, researching meant going to a library, excuse me, really looking at things that need to be added to your document, a feasibility study, whether you're writing a white paper, whatever you're writing. But now research is so easy, but people don't get the most authoritative source. They just accept anything they see out there without vetting it on Google. So, you improve those interviewing and researching skills as you go along. And I think those two have been that, and of course the writing, the main one, have been essential to my growth in personally and in my business.
Writing is one of those skills that really can be a big differentiator in your career, because not only does it help you just in your general, especially in the workplace today, day-to-day interactions with your team, your boss, your peers across the organization to not only present a professional image, but also convey your ideas very clearly. Being an effective writer is going to help you, I believe, also on that, the verbal communication.
It does. Writing.
Strong connection.
It does. Writing helps you to organize your thinking. If you remember back in Lee Iacocca's, his autobiography, he talks about asking people in his organization in key spots, even when they would tell him an idea in the hallway in a meeting, he'd say, write that to me. He said, I want to see how they think. And writing requires you to think. You can just do a brain dump, but that's not sufficient. You need to go back and reorganize. What is my main message? What do I want the reader to do because of it? And it helps you think through issues. I have friends who say, when I make a key decision, I write it out and I sort of build the case. And I suggest when people want to improve their thinking that they literally write as if they were writing to a board of directors or advisory team and build their case. They will get so much more focused on their key point and what they want to do if they write. Write, speaking is too easy. You know, we've all been talking since the age of two and we just sort of ramble when we talk, but to have a real poignant, persuasive message takes thought. And that thought process is evident, or its absence is evident on the page. When somebody reads your email, they read your study, your white paper, your report at the end of the quarter, whatever, they can tell whether you are a good, clear thinker or not. And that comes across in your writing.
I think because speaking is so easy, people often just default to that. They take the easy way out, say, and it leads to people winging it, which more often than not does not end well for folks when you wing it. So I love your point of just really take the time, write it out as if you're presenting it to, say, a board of advisors, a board of directors, really just to help kind of gather your thoughts, whether you're going to formally put it out there in some sort of document or a proposal, or if this ultimately is going to lead to some sort of speech or presentation to the board, really starting with gathering your thoughts on paper, or and I like writing things out on paper versus typing, but doing one of them, I think, will make a big difference.
Absolutely. And you know, the big problem that I see all the time with people making a presentation is they try to just write their slides. They start with a slide, create, and that sort of puts them in a rut. You know, they have to speak to their slides, so to speak, instead of thinking first, what is your one sentence message that you want to get across? What action do you want? And then building your slides to support that, you have a totally different presentation, one that's really effective.
Absolutely. So Diana, with you publishing 50 books, doing keynote speeches, have done, you know, lots of training for big organizations, who is somebody that really has helped develop or had an influence on your communication style? What's maybe something that you took from them and kind of molded it and maybe made it your own now?
Well, you know, I think probably the thing, what the person who's had the most influence would be writers, people I've never met, but because I'm a writer, I pay attention to what they write. From Hemingway, I learned how to do great dialogue. You know, part of those 50 books, most of them are business books on communication, but I have published 5 novels with major publishers. And knowing how to do good dialogue, even if you're developing a course and you're in the training business, you have case studies that you need to write. So I've learned dialogue from Hemingway. I think from F. Scott Fitzgerald. That happens to be one of my favorite writers. I love The Great Gatsby. I think I learned technique of plotting and narrating. And from Anne Lamott, I love all of her books, but particularly the one Traveling Mercies. Her authenticity, her sincerity comes through so loudly, so clearly in that book that you can't help but be engaged. And so I learned from her the value of speaking like other people speak, not stilted, not long involved sentences, but the oral language and how to translate that connection to the written language. So I think from Hemingway, Fitzgerald, and Anne Lamott that I have learned a lot about communication through the years.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because reading typically doesn't come up a whole lot in conversations around communication skills. From my perspective, that's one of the best things that you can do to hone your communication skills, both written, verbal, presentation, whatever it is. And it's something that I repeatedly stress to my kids, is that communication skills are important. One of the best ways you can start to develop them, especially at your age, continue to read, because you're going to pick up all those things that you just mentioned, not only from a grammatical standpoint, from learning basic grammar, but dialogue, plot, how to build an arc and a story and keep people engaged with your message.
Absolutely. I think that is the number one thing. If I were going to advise somebody, that would be the number one thing. Read widely, not just in business books, but a lot of different genres. I think also to learn how to figure out how a movie achieves its effect. So, you know, that way, if you want to sit and veg out on TV all weekend and just watch Netflix and binge, but think, how did they achieve that? You know how you felt at the end of that story, or mm-hmm. that how suspenseful that was, or whatever you're watching. Think, how was that achieved? How did I draw this conclusion? Was it something about characterization? Was it something about the setting that gave me that feeling? But thinking of the backstory, so to speak, of the intended effect in a movie is a good thing to do. Also, I think that you can learn by watching interviews on the news program. They're always interviewing, you know, a person on the street, not a major celebrity, but also mm-hmm. those who've been trained in media and how to respond as a spokesperson. How did they take a terrible situation and turn it around so that it sounds more positive? How mm-hmm. did they apologize? Why did some, you know, you're always hearing celebrities make some big goof, you know, a movie star, a sports figure, whatever. And some apologies land well and people mm-hmm. forgive, forget, and they move on with their career. And others, it just floors people. How could you mm-hmm. say that? And there's this big pushback. So listening to how people make apologies, listen to how people praise other people. You have a leader that is really good at encouraging his team and they always stay up, and you're in a corporation. I would think, what is he or she doing as a manager that I'm not doing for my people? So listening to how people achieve the results that they have, I think, is extremely important.
And you can learn so much every day just by paying attention to those things that you mentioned, whether it is a celebrity on TV, somebody on the news, just interactions that you have with people in your day-to-day life. You're going to pick up things to do, some things not to do, and a lot of times find them in unexpected places, learning experiences in unexpected places. And just recently, I saw a video pop up on my newsfeed on social media channel somewhere, and it was of a musician testifying in front of Congress. And the musician, what kind of a rock, rap, country singer, has a criminal background, face covered in tattoos, but gave this 6-minute, powerful, eloquent speech to Congress and used stories and analogies, paused, established credibility, all the hallmarks of effective communication. And you could tell that he had listened and done his research on the front end. And it was just one of those things to step back and say, there are so many ways that we can learn these skills. We just sometimes shut our mouths, open our eyes, open our ears, and pay attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can learn from the bad examples as much, if not more, from the good example. I've written blogs, you know, talking about what you can learn from this bad example, or what you can learn from this bad customer service interaction, or whatever. And I mentioned that the issue with apologies. I always zero in and think, let's dissect what they said or what they didn't say. Why did people react so negatively to that message? So I'm just always, my husband, in fact, teases me all the time about, I know we're never just going to go to the movie. You're going to tell me how they achieved that. I know we're not going to just watch this interview on TV in this news program. You're going to tell me why that apology didn't work. But I think always analyzing, always having an open mindset to analyze what's good or what's bad, what worked and what didn't work, and why behind it is excellent training for anybody who wants to become a master communicator.
Absolutely. Diana, as we are wrapping up here, what piece of closing advice would you have to the folks listening to this, whether they're fresh out of school, getting ready to start their first job, they might be mid-career, ready to make a pivot and become an entrepreneur, start their own thing? What advice would you have for them around really the importance of developing the skills we talked about today?
I think they have to take ownership of their communication skills. You know, a lot of people approach their job as if my boss needs to give me this feedback, the company needs to provide this, but it's not just a company thing that will benefit you in one job, one role. It is going to be communication skills are going to be the critical skill throughout your career, no matter where you work, what job, what your assignment is. You'll just use different aspects of it. In one job, you may write more than another job. You may deliver more presentations in this job than another job. But you will always have to communicate. And I think people don't always step up to the plate and say, I can't stand around and wait for people to help me, wait for feedback, wait for a mentor, wait for somebody to tell me what I need to do to polish to go to the next level. I think that you have to own it yourself and get the education you need by enrolling in training programs, by buying books, by listening to podcasts that give you those skills yourself, and they can't be taken away from you.
Yep. And the beauty of developing these skills is that they're not only going to help you at work and in your career, they're going to help you in every single aspect of your life. So couldn't agree
more. I'm glad
more.
You mentioned that, Scott. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I can't tell you how many times people have come up and said, you saved my marriage, or I now know how to get my adult child to do whatever. These are skills that you use throughout your life. They are just so essential. I can't emphasize that enough.
Absolutely. And I'll be sure to include this in the show notes, but if somebody wants to get in touch with you regarding, you know, your books or just to learn more about what you're doing, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Yes, it's Diana. My name is spelled with two N's, Diana.Boer, like boo her, except I hope they don't. Diana.Boer at BoerResearch.com. So it's BoerResearch.com is the website.
Perfect. I will definitely include that in the notes. So anyone listening wants to get in touch with Diana, you can find it down there. Diana, thank you again. This was such a fun conversation. It's a topic that's near and dear to my heart. Always fun to talk to somebody who shares that passion.
Thank you, Scott. It was great to be with you.
Have a great day. A special thanks again to my guest, Diana Boer. Diana's point about listening is spot on. Taking the time to listen on the front end will pay dividends on the back end by being able to better understand and engage with your audience. As we wrap up this episode, remember that the journey of improving communication skills is ongoing. Make sure to stay connected with Communicast by subscribing so you can benefit from future conversations with guests. If you found value in today's episode, I'd be grateful for your support. Leaving a rating or review is a fantastic way to let us know the impact the show has had on you. Thanks, and have a great day.